This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy. Just drop in some details about yourself to see if you're eligible to save money when you bundle your home and auto policies. The process only takes minutes and could mean hundreds more in your pocket. Visit progressive.com after this episode to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
This episode is brought to you by IQBar. Pretty much everyone I know struggles with their energy levels these days. But if you often find yourself flagging, the solution might be easier than you think. IQBar protein bars, IQ Mix hydration mixes, and IQ Joe mushroom coffees are the delicious low-sugar brain and body fuel that you need to win your day. We got the ultimate sampler pack, and let me tell you, it disappeared in days, especially the IQ Mix Zero Sugar Drink Mix sachets. They hydrate you with electrolytes, improve your mood, and boost your mental clarity. All IQ Bar products are packed with clean, delicious ingredients that keep you physically and mentally fit, like magnesium, lion's mane, and more. And right now, IQ Bar is offering our special podcast listeners 20% off all IQ Bar products, including the Ultimate Sampler Pack, plus free shipping. To get your 20% off, text redhanded to 64,000. Text redhanded to 64,000. That's redhanded to 64,000. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details. I'm Hannah.
I'm Saruti.
And welcome to our second bonus episode in 3 weeks. I literally just worked that out yesterday. Aren't you the luckiest listeners in the world? That's nuts. 5 episodes in 3 weeks.
We're on fire.
We're on fire and so tired.
A big tired fire over here.
Today's episode is actually courtesy of our friends over at ADT, who are the number one home security company. They can give you and your family real protection right now, this very second. All you need to do is hop over to adt.com/podcast to see what they can do. And if you go and have a look at it, that helps us out significantly. So please do that. We're going to give you a proper rundown of all of the high-tech and fancy things ADT can do a little bit later on. Break-ins are scary, and ADT can help. And while thinking about how we were going to even come at this bonus episode, I went down a bit of a rabbit hole into the history of house alarms, which who knew I could spend 3 days on that, but somehow managed it. So we're going to give you a quick rundown on how home security systems came about. And then the second bit of the episode, we have a corker of a story for you. It's got burglary, break-ins, booby traps, and an eccentric gynecologist. What else could you want on your Tuesday? For the love of God, tell me what else you want. I don't think I want anything else.
No, I mean, I don't think I want anything else. But what I also definitely don't want is a gynecologist where the adjective used to describe them is eccentric.
No, probably not.
I would like boring. Overly...
Natural overachiever, yeah.
Overly boring gynecologist. Thank you very much.
But also did very, very well at vagina school. But you're going to have to wait for the eccentric gynecologist, I'm afraid. Before we get going, please, please, please do not forget that this episode is brought to you by ADT. And ADT home security is real protection. If you had to pick a animal to guard your home, what would it be?
And I'm not allowed to obviously pick a dog because that's boring, right?
No. And also, as I learned, not the best answer.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have spent a few nights camping near penguins, and what I've realised is they are the loudest creatures I've ever heard in my entire life. So maybe that, maybe a penguin.
I think birds in general are quite a good shout. I've been spending some time with this thought. I still don't know. My dog's shit. Really shit. Like Puddle, she just couldn't.
No, Blue's a good guard dog.
Oh, really?
He's so loud. Barks at everything.
Puddle doesn't really make any noise. She only barks at the postman and she only ever barks once.
She is also quite old, though, isn't she? Bless her.
She's always been like that, though. It's not like she'd slowed down in her middle age.
Oh, no.
She's like 56 in human years or something.
Oh, no, I can hear Blue barking now. And I think probably someone's just walking past the house. So he's a pretty good guard dog. Yeah, we had that. I think I told the story at the live show, but we had a false alarm break-in a few months ago at my parents' house, which was very interesting.
You told it in Car Chronicles, I think.
Oh, did I tell it in Car Chronicles? Okay, in that case, for all those people who are just committed red-handed, you're just going to have to hear the story again. So we are sleeping, middle of the night. Apparently it all kicks off downstairs. My brother goes downstairs to get a glass of water, is convinced that he hears somebody downstairs. And his response to this was to walk back up to the landing outside my door and just start screaming that there's someone in the house. My dad's up, my mum's up, they're all running downstairs. I slept through the majority of that. And then the three of them ran into my room together to wake me up. And then I don't sleep with trousers on a lot of the time. So I'm just like, what is going on? Can everyone just get the hell out of my room? No, there's someone in the house. Call 999 is all I'm hearing from my mum. I'm like, oh my God, fucking hell. And genuinely, I felt genuine fear that night. And I called 999. I'm on the phone to this woman and I'm like whispering, telling her that someone's in the house. And my brother's like, Blue's not barking. And I'm like, yeah, so someone can't be downstairs because he's being quiet. And my brother was like, no, it must mean that they've done something to him. They've stabbed Blue. And I'm like, oh my God, what the fuck? We go downstairs and Blue's like cowering in a corner. My brother's got like a fucking bat and my dad's like carrying something else. And he's like, look how scared he looks. I'm like, of course he looks fucking scared. We're like running down the stairs in the middle of the night screaming. Turns out there was no one in the house. And then the 999 woman wouldn't put the phone down because it obviously could be that someone's telling me to tell her that there's no one in the house. Took a long time to convince her to hang up the phone on me. Eventually, I just put the phone down.
Every time I hear that story, it gets better. Just like running around, fearing for your lives. In deepest, darkest Letchworth.
Yeah, it's not the one to be woken up in the middle of the night with three people screaming at you that the dog's been stabbed and there's someone in the house. We just called it a dry run and I failed because I didn't get out of bed. I thought it was just someone, them just like having a nightmare. I genuinely remember hearing my brother scream and thinking, oh, for fuck's sake, and turning over and pulling the duvet over my head. So yeah, you don't want me to be your guard dog, basically. But yeah. Maybe a penguin, maybe not. I don't know. What is the best one?
We're quite used to the idea of guard dogs, but thousands of years ago, the Romans actually used geese, which I thought was pretty clever because geese are fucking horrible.
They are horrible.
They're nasty. They're loud. They bite you.
Mm.
I got bitten by a goose once when I was a kid and I fell in a pond. Very clear memory.
Your house will be full of shit, though, if you use geese.
But they're not in the house. They're in the garden in front of your house. So if someone's approaching the house, they're like, meh, meh, meh.
The outside of your house will be covered in shit.
I mean, I do pick up my dog shit because it's like the law, but I wouldn't pick up a goose's shit.
No. Once a goose shat all over me while I sat outside the library of my university. Like, while it was flying over me, I had to go home and shower and I just had to throw the bag away because I couldn't get the smell out. I do actually have a few more university stories in this week's episode, so stay tuned for that. Now, before we get there, the first sign we see of what we would recognise as a home alarm system showed up in the early 1700s when a British man called Mr. Tidsley?
Who knows? Tidsley? Couldn't find his first name, so anyone's guess.
We don't know how to say a second name. Exactly. Let's go with Tidsley, because that's how it's written down. But yeah, we have no idea what his first name is, so we're going to keep it really quaint and just call him Mr. Tidsley from the 1700s.
If you can find it, like, honestly, have a home alarm medal, because I could not find it anywhere on the internet.
Anyway, he connected his door lock to a set of chimes so that when an intruder attempted to use a skeleton key or something else to open the door, the chimes would sound and ideally wake up the home dweller.
I'm not convinced that wind chimes would wake me up, though.
Maybe for programmed and waiting for them.
How do you Pavlov's dogs yourself into being awoken by wind chimes?
I don't know, but you can do all sorts of things to trick your brain. I remember when I was a kid, I had a book of how to improve your memory skills.
You're such a dork.
And there was this thing in there that said, like, you know, if you want to remember something the next day, I don't know why you wouldn't just write it down, but like, apparently this is a memory trick. You think about it before you go to bed and you like make something look a little bit weird in your room. Like you put your lampshade on tilt or something. And you go to sleep, and when you wake up in the morning and you see that your lampshade is tilted, you'll remember the thing that you wanted to remember when you set it up to look tilted.
Oh yeah, like people tying knots in their hankies. I've heard about that.
Exactly. So there you go.
It doesn't make you any less of a dork, I'm afraid.
I never claimed to be. It would be over 100 years before anyone would have a better idea than this, whether we think wind chimes would wake Hannah up or not. And in the 1850s, the better idea came from a Bostonian, Augustus Pope. And that is the last we will hear from Britain in this episode, because it turns out that after its initial inception, the burglar alarm became a distinctly American idea. Now, who revamped the home alarm with electricity and magnets? How do they work?
I've been trying to entrap you into an insane clown posse joke for 2 years and I just did it. And I know you don't get it.
No, I don't get it. I've never listened to the insane clown posse.
Oh my God. I'm just going to leave that as a joke for the listeners.
Oh no.
If I explain it, it won't be funny.
Okay, fine. We'll move on. What is it that their followers call themselves?
Juggalos and juggalettes.
Juggalos, that's
And they go
one.
Whoop whoop. And oh, they have a big convention every year.
I think you'd fit right into a juggalo convention, you know.
You're not the first person to tell me that.
Oh my God. Can you imagine how much I wouldn't fit in at a juggalo convention?
Do you know how much I want to go to the juggalo convention and make a documentary? Like, so hard.
Oh, I think I've seen one in there. Was it Louis Theroux? I don't know. Never mind.
I don't think there was a Louis Theroux. I think there was a Vice or something.
Oh, Vice, of course. Classic. Now, anyway, so this guy who came up with the sort of like revamped home system, his system included mounting bells on top of windows and doors in a person's house. And if someone attempted to open any door or window, the electrical circuit would close via a spring fitted to the door and the bell would sound. Quick question here. What about like, you know, Temple of Doom shit? Can we say if the Egyptians had all these booby traps in there, is that like the earliest type of home security system, tomb security system?
Yeah, I suppose you could say so, but it's not an alarm, really. No. It's more of a death machine.
I see. I see what you're saying.
I suppose it's sort of like the history of making people aware that something bad is happening inside your house.
Got it. That makes sense. I just wanted to ask, because I just saw this.
No, I think it's a very good question.
I just think it's like, oh, it all started in the 1700s in Britain and no one before that was doing anything. But I was like, maybe, but then maybe all right, maybe.
No, I mean, technically, I said it started thousands of years ago with the Romans and their geese, but let's not fight.
Oh, this is true. No, it's just because I saw this hilarious meme on the internet and I can't find it. And if someone can find it and post it to me, I will be eternally grateful. I've made some very odd Google searches to try find this meme and I just can't do it. So I don't know how we've managed to go into the world of like racial talk on a bonus episode with ADT.
It never takes that long.
Not with us, the tired fires over here. But basically, it was a meme that was like pictures of like ancient things in Europe. And it was like, oh, wow, our ancestors. And then it was a picture of like the pyramids and like things from Asia. And it was like aliens. And I just, that just made me laugh so hard because it's so true.
Aliens or thousands and thousands of slaves.
But I mean, it's the idea that it's like, these were all absolutely made by our white ancestors, but those brown people couldn't have built these pyramids. It had to have been aliens. And it just really made me laugh. And I can't find that meme. I'll keep looking, or someone send it to me, please.
This goes out on Tuesday. You'll have it by Wednesday morning.
Can't wait. I've tried Googling racist alien meme, all of that. I can't find it. Someone
racist
help me.
Alien
it's
meme.
So funny.
I'm putting that on your gravestone.
Here lies tired fire colon racist alien meme. Why is this tombstone so shit? Quotes, not in this economy. There you go.
Great, done. So what we're talking about. So the closing of the electrical circuit making a bell sound is where we're up to. We're in the 1850s. And this system was patented by the Bostonian Pope. When I first was reading about Augustus Pope, I was just like skimming an article and there was a wonderful 30 seconds of my life when I thought the Pope invented home security alarms.
Good. Maybe he did. He could say whatever he wants, couldn't he?
He so didn't. Oh, God. Anyway, so Pope, right, so he patents the home alarm system in 1853. And if you think patents and this story are boring, you are incorrect. It's about to get pretty tense in home alarm town. Somewhere between 1857 and 1858, Pope caught typhoid. and sold his patent to a chap called Edwin Holmes for $9,500, which back in the black and white times was a pretty sizable sum. It was nearly $300,000 in today's money. That is a lot of money for a patent, I think. $300,000. I can't think of a single idea I would buy for $300,000.
Really? I don't know. I feel like patents are quite expensive. I feel like that sounds about right.
But I don't know who's like hanging out in the patent shop being like, hey, you've got to...
I mean...
You want to buy a sundial? Like, I don't know.
We never claim to be experts in patent buying and selling, but yeah, I reckon...
Speak for yourself.
How dare you? we'll continue. Please carry on.
Sorry. Yeah, I know you're all on the edge of your seats. Pope died of typhoid in 1858 and Holmes moved the burglar alarm business to New York, where, according to him, all of the country's burglars made their home. In 1959, improvements were made to the alarm system by George Millikan. His system had the alarm in the room where the homeowner was sleeping rather than on top of the windows and doors themselves. But sales were tricky. People were still pretty scared of electricity in 1859. But Holmes didn't let that stop him, and he continued his relentless hard sell.
Could I give you a top tip for people who are scared of electricity and don't want to get an electrical home security system? Though you definitely should, because this episode is courtesy of ADT. You should go take a look at them. But if you are, would you like to hear how I used to have a non-electrical safeguard system in my room at uni because I was so convinced people were coming in and out of my room at night?
I have never been more impressed by a sentence you said. So yes, tell me everything.
So when I was in my third year, really random shit kept happening to me. So things kept going missing. Things kept like disappearing.
Oh, I know this one, the shoe story.
Yeah, and then turning up in other places. The shoe story, but also the folder story.
Oh, I'd forgotten about the folder. Very important.
Yeah, so quick Precy on the folder story. So I'm in like approaching the end of my final year, my third year at university. And I've got one particular module that it was like 40 credits in a 3-hour exam. I have an entire folder full of notes that I have amassed over the course of a year. And went to the library one day, came home, had it on my bed, went to sleep, woke up the next morning, folder's gone. And the people who went to the library with me can absolutely attest to the fact that it came home with me and it was on my bed because my housemate was sat on the bed next to the folder for a while. Vanished. I was fucking hysterical. Went to the library, checked there, checked all around the house, tore this flat apart. And it was a new build flat, so it wasn't like loads of nooks and crannies it could have like fallen into. Just couldn't find it. Bright purple folder. Even my, like the guy who lives next door helped me. Lifted up my bed, we took everything apart, wasn't there. Then, after the exam's done, I'm like packing to go home, open up a suitcase in my room, the folder's in there. How did it get in there? Someone was doing shit, right?
Or you slept walked and put it in those.
I don't know. I just don't think the only time I've ever slept walked in my life, I remembered what I was doing. And I don't think I did that. And I was in an ongoing feud with the girls who lived beneath me because they used to play really, really fucking loud music all night, every night. So I'd go down there and I would like bang on the door and I've called the police on them multiple times because I just wanted to sleep. So I was pretty sure they were coming into my room and doing shit. So I used to sleep with a like big wooden board lent against the door and an open bag of flour. So if somebody came in, it would all get knocked over and it would wake me up.
I think the exam stress got to you quite significantly is what I think.
No, it's true. And a pair of my shoes went missing and turned up in a fucking totally different street that I'd never been to. I no idea. No idea what was going on. But anyway, we're all past that. But yeah, there you go. Open bag of flour. My mum suggested that. So there you go.
And did you ever find any footprints?
No, it wasn't about the footprints. It was that if somebody had not opened the door and knocked the flour over, they wouldn't be able to clean it up or put it back as it was.
Right. But did that happen?
No, it didn't happen.
Just checking.
But then after I started putting the flour there, nothing went missing again. So maybe they just knew. Maybe it was someone who was close to me and they knew I was putting flour there.
Tune in next week for the Flour Chronicles, where we will be interviewing the people who used to live underneath Saruti, who she called the police on, apparently.
She fucking deserved it. Anyway.
This is a paid advertisement from BetterHelp. The 11th to the 17th of May is Mental Health Awareness Week. And here's a pretty wild stat for you. Despite all the work to destigmatize mental health and to encourage people to be open and talk about how they're feeling, nearly 70% of Brits say that societal attitudes discourage them from seeking help. That's according to BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report, and it's a pretty sad reality. because that means that over half of Brits are struggling to reach out to someone and have a chat about what's going on deep down. Are you one of those people? This Mental Health Awareness Week, why not check in and ask yourself if you've been feeling stuck, anxious, or overwhelmed? Mental health support isn't just about being in a crisis. It's about having someone to talk to about how you're feeling, whether it's up or down. If you want someone to talk to, why not try BetterHelp? BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you, so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences. And BetterHelp's over 10 years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, you can switch to a different therapist at any time from their tailored recommendations. You don't have to be on this journey alone. Find support and have someone with you in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com/redhanded. That's betterhelp.com/redhanded. As the weather gets warmer, the absolute last thing I want to be dealing with is uncomfortable underwear. Thankfully, I can rely on Honeylove to keep me cool, comfy, and supported. Honeylove is an independent, female-founded brand, and all their products are intelligently designed by women who actually wear them. Got a big party coming up? I know it's wedding season. Honeylove shapewear is designed to move with you, so you can say goodbye to that pesky shapewear we all know rolls down as soon as you hit the dance floor. My personal favorite is the Cloud Embrace bra, a modern wireless t-shirt bra with sturdy, light padded foam cups that feel like a cloud against the skin. No more sweating on the tube with a painful wire digging into your ribs. Treat yourself to the most advanced bras and shapewear on the market. Use our exclusive link to save 20% off Honeylove at honeylove.com/redhanded. That's honeylove.com/redhanded. After you check out, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Experience the new standard in comfort and support with Honeylove. Recently, I've been trying to be a bit more intentional about what I wear day to day. Nothing crazy, but you know, just trying not to look an absolute mess every time we record. And so I need some pieces that go together and are comfortable for all of our long recording sessions. And on this new mission, Quince has become the key. The fabrics feel elevated, the fits are flattering, and everything just works without overthinking it. Quince makes it easy to refresh your everyday this spring with pieces that feel as good as they look. That's because they use premium materials like 100% European linen, organic cotton, and ultra-soft denim. Their lightweight linen pants, dresses, and tops start at just $30 and are effortless, breathable, and easy to wear on repeat. And everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. That's because they work directly with ethical factories that cut out the middleman. So you're paying for quality and craftsmanship, not brand markup. Personally, I've been really impressed with the denim pieces that they've sent over. And we all know that denim can be hit and miss, especially when it's at an affordable price point. It's either too thin or scratchy, or it's not even denim. But when I tried on a pair of jeans from Quince, I was so shocked by the quality, I had to double check the price tag. Refresh your everyday with luxury you'll actually use. Head to quince.com/redhanded for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/redhanded for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/redhanded.
Anyway, Augustus Pope certainly was not encouraging people to leave bags of flour in front of their doors because he had just spunked 300 grand on this home alarm idea. But luckily for him, gradually, people did start to buy his alarm system. By 1866, he had 1,200 customers, which in a city like New York, even back then, not very many. But better times were around the corner. He also made nice wooden boxes for the alarms to go in, so they weren't big ugly bells, little nice ornate boxes. Nice touch. In 1880, electricity was installed in street lamps in the United States, so people had had a lot more time to get used to the idea of electrical currents, and particularly of having them inside their house. And in 1905, the American Telephone and Telegraph Company, which you may recognise under their new name, AT&T, brought the home's burglar alarm business and linked it to the emergency services. So for the first time in 1905, the police and the fire department would show up if your alarm went off. Before that, it was just making a lot of noise.
Another upturn in sales was just around the corner. The end of World War I in 1918 brought with it an increase in crime rates, which in turn meant that people were keen to invest in ways to protect their property. It was reasonably common for people to subscribe to a service called door shakers, and they were a group of men who would come round your house after dark and shake your doors to ensure that they were locked. Why can't you do it yourself? That's what I don't understand, because that sounds terrifying.
Maybe in case you've forgotten, but yeah, it sounds really scary, a big group of men coming to your house in the dark to waggle your doorknob. That sounds absolutely horrendous.
Well, when you put it like that, it definitely does. Now, around this time too, insurance companies offered discounted rates to homeowners with alarm systems, so the consumer demand for home alarm systems increased significantly. And the release of George Orwell's 1984 brought surveillance into public discussion in a way that it had never been before. A lot of people claim that London is the most CCTV'd city in the world. And I think we've spoken about this before on the show, and we definitely did mention it on Harmontown. But now there is another contender. According to some sources, Beijing has now actually overtaken London. But because in the UK there is no law that requires anyone to register their CCTV systems with anyone, we have absolutely no way of knowing just how many cameras are actually watching us in the capital. According to the Reader's Digest in 2013, there were 6 million security cameras in the UK.
So if we take into account that the population of the UK is 66 million, or at least it was in 2013, enter Carol Vorderman, if we have 6 million security cameras and 66 million people, is that about 11 cameras per person? I don't know.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Is
yes.
it? Did I do it right?
You just divide 66 by 6. That's 11.
Okay, but I didn't know that that's how you did it.
Yeah, you did it. You did it.
I did do it, but I didn't know I was doing it, which in some ways is better.
Bravo.
2013, at the very least, one camera per every 11 people in the UK. And again, that number is very likely to be much, much higher than that because nobody has to tell anyone when they get a security camera. This was very interesting, actually. The first ever home security system to integrate video recording was invented and patented in 1966 by Marie Van Britten Brown, a woman of colour from Queens. She felt anxious when her husband was out of the house. He was an electrical engineer, so he was gone sort of all hours. And Marie especially didn't like answering the door without knowing who was on the other side of it. So together, her and her husband devised the first ever closed circuit television for home security, complete with a two-way microphone and an alarm button should the person in the house feel under threat. By the 70s, the Brown model was widely in use as video footage became totally integrated into home security. But although the system was patented by Brown, she never made a penny off her and her husband's invention. As a black woman, she had no chance of infiltrating a male-dominated white marketplace.
By the 80s, home security systems included motion sensors, infrared, fiber optics, environmental control, and ultrasound technology. And by the 90s, home security was brought down to a reasonable price point. And that brings us right up to now. We are in 2019, in case you'd forgotten, and the people who have brought you this very special extra episode of Red Handed have the answers to all of your home security questions and needs. ADT is the number one smart home security provider. Here are just some of the things that they can do. ADT offer their customers a secure smart home with video doorbells, indoor and outdoor cameras, smart locks and smart lights, all controlled from the ADT app or with just the sound of your beautiful voice.
ADT will custom design a security system for your home, which can include monitored carbon monoxide and smoke detectors, and safety on the go with the ADT app. With ADT, homeowners get the latest innovations and 18,000 employees safeguarding you, and they also have a connection straight to first responders. To find out more about all the things we just said, all you need to do is go to adt.com/podcast. So get on over to adt.com/podcast to learn all about how ADT can design and install a secure, smart home for you and your loved ones, and even your brother who you don't like very much. Now, as promised, we have a story for you. Straight out of olden time in New York, we have the Collier brothers. I am obsessed with this story, and I have been for probably about how long have I been back? 5 years, 6 years, easily. So, when I first moved back to London after living abroad, I worked front of house on a show called The Dazzle, which starred Andrew Scott of Sexy Priest in Fleabag fame. And that play is based on the Collier brothers' story. And it is bizarre. Like the first time I watched the show, I was like, I have to go, these people are real. Like I have to go and read absolutely everything I can possibly find about them. And I've wanted to do an episode on it for a while, but I thought it was a little bit too olden timey for a regular episode. So I'm absolutely thrilled that ADT have given us the opportunity to have a crack at it.
Now you can tell it's going to be weird just because of the names we're starting with. Homer Lusk Collier and Langley Wakeman Collier were brothers. Homer was the eldest. He was born in 1881, and Langley came into the world 4 years later. Their father, Herman, was the eccentric gynecologist you were promised at the start of the episode, and their mother, Susie, was an opera singer. The Collier parents were also first cousins. Herman was seen as eccentric by his peers because he would regularly canoe to work down the East River and carry his canoe on his back through the streets of Harlem.
I'd love to canoe to work.
Sounds
hilarious.
No, sounds fucking awful. I think the novelty would wear off very quickly.
Quite possibly.
Herman also collected specimens of diseases and disorders in glass jars, including a double-headed fetus. It's like it's not real. It's so crazy.
I know.
It's so crazy. Like, is it homunculi? Homunculus.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's got these just like casually around.
Daddy dies chocolate homunculus.
Oh, yes. Brilliant. Oh, perfect. But yeah, it's like if you've watched American Horror Story, Murder House, when they go into the basement. All
absolutely.
Of that.
Absolutely.
It's fucking scary as shit. Now, when they were grown-ups, the Collier brothers would boast loudly to anyone who would listen that their ancestors had arrived in the Americas from England on the Speedwell, which arrived in Massachusetts just a week after the Mayflower in 1620, which they claimed made them some of the very first Americans. We obviously mean Europeans came there and settled America.
Well, I don't think that's what they mean, but...
That's not what they mean. That's what we mean before anyone comes for me.
Both Langley and Homer went to Columbia University, but neither one of them ever left their family home. Homer studied Admiralty law and Langley read engineering and chemistry. Langley was an exceptional pianist. He played at Carnegie Hall a few times, but stopped playing because he got jealous of one of his contemporaries and decided that he would never be as good as him, so he just gave up. I felt that feeling.
What? I was about to say, what a horrible trait.
I felt the feeling. I didn't do it.
That's so fucking petulant, isn't it?
I am quite a petulant person, though.
I was talking about him. You keep making about yourself.
What a horrible quality. In 1909, the eccentric OBGYN Dr. Herman moved his family into a four-story brownstone in Harlem at 2078 Fifth Avenue, and the house would make his sons famous. 10 years later, Dr. Herman and Susie separated. The doctor moved out, and Susie remained in the brownstone with her sons. Dr. Herman died in 1923, leaving all of his curiosities, medical instruments, and shelves upon shelves of medical books and journals to Susie.
That was his last, like, fuck you, Susie.
Now you've got to deal with all of my shit. Take my Danny Dyer's chocolate homunculus and you'll like it. So all of his stuff is just put straight back into the Fifth Avenue home. The brothers never married, so they lived in the brownstone with their opera-singing mum, Susie, until she died in 1929. She left everything she had to her two sons, so at the ages of 48 and 44, Homer and Langley were without their parents in a house full of stuff. For the next 4 years without their mother, life continued as normal for the Collier brothers. They entertained guests regularly and continued to work. Homer was a lawyer and Langley traded pianos. Having been left a juicy inheritance by their mum, the pair bought the building opposite their own home with the intention of renting it out as apartments. But sadly, they would never get round to it.
In 1932, Homer lost his sight, and some sources call this a stroke, and others will tell you that he suffered from hemorrhaging behind his eyes. But either way, it had an enormous impact on the lives of both Homer and Langley. Langley stopped trading pianos in order to care for his blind brother, and both of them started to withdraw from the neighbourhood. They certainly stopped entertaining guests. Langley told the press that this was because neither of the brothers wanted to be bothered, but I think it might have had a little bit more to do with the Great Depression making Harlem a lot poorer, and let's face it, a lot blacker than it had been in previous years. But the brothers did not lose faith in each other. Langley was sure that he could cure Homer's blindness with a diet of 100 oranges a week, black bread and peanut butter. Langley started to collect newspapers so that his brother could catch up on all the news that he'd missed while he couldn't see. Langley was fiercely protective of Homer and wouldn't let anybody in the house to see him, especially not a doctor. He was recorded saying, quote, "You must remember, that we are the sons of a doctor. We have a medical library of 15,000 books in the house. We decided we would not call in any doctors. You see, we knew too much about medicine.
The bread, oranges and peanut butter diet didn't work. And Homer's health took another turn for the worse when he developed rheumatism that left him entirely paralysed, meaning that he relied totally on Langley to keep him alive. And Langley did a fantastic job of looking after his brother, but he also did a cracking job of filling their house with junk. He was nicknamed in the neighbourhood as the Ghostly Man. He would only go out at night dressed in basically rags and skip around New York. He would walk as far as Williamsburg in Brooklyn in the dead of night to buy a loaf of bread. From Harlem to Williamsburg is fucking far. That is so far.
Oh, yes. I've done it on your very confusing subway system, New York.
He would bring back anything to the house that took his fancy along his way. And we're not just talking about food. Langley would take home buggies, tin cans, bottles, bottle caps, literally everything that might be on a street in New York City in the 30s. Langley wanted it in his house. And Homer was blind and paralysed, so you have to wonder how much about the state of his house he could have known. But he can still smell stuff, surely.
Now, Langley was asked by a newspaper why he wore clothes held together with safety pins. He answered that he would be robbed if he didn't. Now, it's fairly obvious if you look at the paranoia, the reclusive behaviour and the nighttime excursions, something quite serious was going on with Langley's mental health. Hoarding can be a symptom of obsessive-compulsive disorder. But given the time and place, Langley was never diagnosed. Not surprising either, as he would never go near a doctor. The Collier brothers had no source of income, so they stopped paying their bills. So the power was eventually shut off in their house. But that didn't stop Langley. He was an engineer, remember? And he managed to rig an old car to act as a generator for the whole house. He would take water from the pumps in public parks and use a kerosene heater in the house. New York is freezing in the winter. That must have been absolutely miserable. Now, these odd behaviours didn't go unnoticed by their neighbours, not least when the brothers bought the house next to them, only to immediately evict the tenants because they wanted to be left alone.
So then it's not like they don't have the money, they just don't want to leave the house to pay the bills.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, because they get left the inheritance. They don't have an income, but it sounds like they have wealth.
By 1938, the reclusive brothers had caught the attention of not just their neighbours, but of the New York Times, who published an article claiming that despite Langley's shabby appearance, the brothers actually lived in, quote, Orientalist splendour, and that they had turned down an offer of $125,000 for their house. Both of these claims were entirely untrue, but no one except Homer and Langley knew that. The article precipitated a number of break-in attempts upon the Collier abode, which did nothing to ease Langley's paranoia. He couldn't stand to have people in the house, so having an alarm system fitted was out of the question. So Langley set booby traps in his house to scupper intruders out of the junk he had brought home from the streets of New York.
In 1942, the Bowery Savings Bank, having not received a mortgage payment from the Colliers for quite some time, attempted to evict the brothers and sent a cleanup crew to their home. When the cleanup crew attempted to enter the house, Langley shouted through the door for someone to call the police. And despite his attempts to shun his neighbours as far away from his house as he possibly could, someone did hear Langley's cries and they did call the police. But the police did exactly what the cleanup crew wanted when they arrived, and they kicked the door in of the Collier brownstone. And when they went in, they were met with a sheer cliff of junk that stood from floor to ceiling.
And these houses, like if you imagine just like the old New York houses, they're fucking huge, like really high ceilings. Go immediately to the Instagram and you've just got to see the pictures to believe what this house was like.
The pictures are shocking. When they went in and they saw all this junk and they saw Langley stood in amongst the jungle of rubbish, and without saying a word, he wrote a check for the equivalent of $97,000 in today's money, clearing the entirety of the mortgage debt. It's like Hannah said, the check cleared and the bank had no choice but to leave Langley Collier and his towers of debris to it. That he didn't have the money, it was that he didn't want to go outside to pay this debt. He was like, okay, you're here now. Here you go. Here's a check.
No online transfers in those days.
Exactly. Here's a check for $97,000 in today's money.
Just to please leave me alone.
Yeah. Now back to the house. It was in such a state that Langley had actually built tunnels through all of the rubbish so that he could make it from room to room. And all of the tunnels were fitted with their very own home security system.
Blind and paralysed Homer stayed in a nest made for him amongst the turmoil. Langley delivered food to him through his rabbit warren of tunnels lined with tripwires. The security system of traps took up most of Langley's time in the days. He was constantly tinkering with them. And he also invented a small vacuum cleaner for hoovering inside pianos, which I thought was quite sweet. The house started to look worse for wear on the outside too. Langley's nighttime travels were becoming more and more well known and people had started throwing rocks at the house so they'd boarded up the windows. The police were called to the house so often that they agreed a system with Langley. They would not break down the door as long as he answered them from the inside. And this system worked for some time. Any time an alarmed resident would report a ghostly man walking through Harlem at night or an odd smell coming from the house or any unusual goings on at the Collier Mansion, the police would go and talk to Langley through the door to make sure that he was okay. But in 1947, the system failed for the first time. A man who called himself Charles Smith called the NYPD to complain about an overwhelming smell of decomposition coming from 2078 Fifth Avenue, the Collier House. The police sent an officer down, but Langley didn't answer through the door, as per their agreement. So the officer attempted to break down the door, but failed. The officer couldn't even see an alternate route into the house. All of the windows were boarded up and entry seemed next to impossible. Six other officers were called to the brownstone and one of them managed to get into the house through a first floor window. And then they started systematically to deconstruct the walls of stuff that Langley Collier had acquired over the years.
Eventually, between 120 and 150 tons of junk were removed from the Collier Mansion on Fifth Avenue. For reference, the average blue whale weighs about 120 tons, although they can get as big as 200 tons, apparently.
Yeah, I just put that in case people are like, well, actually. Your average blue whale is called Paul and he weighs 120 tons, just in case you're wondering.
But the police had a few terrifying discoveries to make before they could clear the house completely. 5 hours after the front door was broken down, while working through the tunnels filled with traps, the police found the body of Homer Collier. No one had seen him for years. When his body was found, Homer had shoulder-length matted grey hair and was wearing a tattered blue dressing gown. He was found with his head resting on his knees. Homer had died of starvation and heart disease, and he had only been dead for about 10 hours. So the decomposing smell of death that had brought the police to the house couldn't have been coming from Homer. At first, the police thought that Langley must have been the one to make the call to the police, but they couldn't find him anywhere. The rumours spread that Langley had been seen getting on a bus to Atlantic City, and the police started a manhunt that would eventually spread to 8 states. But when Langley didn't show up to Homer's funeral on the 1st of April, the police suspected that there was only one place that Langley could be. He must still be in the house, and he was probably dead. These fears were confirmed after 3 weeks of clear out from the Collier Mansion, when an officer found the body of Langley inside a collapsed tunnel in his home. Langley had accidentally tripped the wire on one of his own traps, and the tunnel had caved in on him, crushing him to death. He was just 10 feet from his brother when he had died. The coroner estimated that Langley had died on the 9th of May, 2 weeks before his brother.
Isn't that mad? I feel like that gives you the best idea of just how much of a mess this house is. He was 10 foot away from him and they didn't find him for 3 more weeks.
And enough rubbish fell on him when that tunnel collapsed that it was enough to kill him.
The police deduced that Langley must have been moving through the tunnels when he accidentally triggered his own trap, leaving Homer paralysed, blind and helpless, and with no option but to starve to death. So it was Langley that was the source of the smell, not Homer. I think out of, obviously we discussed quite a lot of deaths, that is a really horrible way to go. Both of them, Langley and Homer, both really, really awful ways to go. Langley was found surrounded by rusty springs, bread boxes and newspapers. He was covered by a suitcase and he had been partially eaten by rats. And eventually the cause of his death was determined to be suffocation. And it's said that 2,000 people gathered around the Collier Mansion to watch all of the debris be removed from it. This is what was found in the 120 tons of refuse. Baby carriages, rusty bicycles, food, potato peelers, guns, glass chandeliers, bowling balls, camera equipment, the folding top of a horse-drawn carriage, a sawhorse, which I believe may be a seesaw. Don't know. 3 dressmaking dummies, painted portraits, photos of pin-up girls from the early 1900s, plaster busts, a kerosene stove, chairs, more than 25,000 books, human organs pickled in jars, 8 live cats, hundreds of yards of unused silks and other fabrics, clocks, and 14 pianos, both grand and upright. And I'm going to hand over to you for the rest of the list.
A clavichord, 2 organs, banjos, violins, bugles, accordions, a gramophone and records, and countless bundles of newspapers and magazines. Some of them were decades old, and thousands of bottles and tin cans and a great deal of rubbish. 34 bank account passbooks with a total of over $3,000, which is about $36,000 in today's money. And alongside this, also a horse jaw, x-ray machines, a human skeleton, and the famous two-headed fetus. Dedication. What a collection, eh? I'm most impressed by the two-headed fetus.
And obviously hoarding is very serious. Like, we're not...
No.
We're not making fun of hoarding. It's a disease. But it just... The sheer volume of it is just absolutely has to be seen to be believed.
Yeah, you have to see the photo. This isn't just like one room. This is an entire house. A massive house.
A four-story mansion. Yeah,
that's the thing that's so alarming. Now, some of the stuff found around the house was auctioned, but most of it was thrown away. The house was condemned soon after it was emptied and knocked down, and it was never rebuilt. There is a pocket park. Pocket park? What's a pocket park?
Just a little park.
Oh, really? Okay. Mm-hmm. There's a pocket park there now, named after the brothers. Both Homer and Langley are buried in Cypress Hills Cemetery in unmarked graves. Now, the brothers were fairly prominent in New York law for a while. At one stage, it was common for parents to warn their children to tidy their rooms, lest they end up like the Collier brothers. And maybe we have some New Yorkers listening who can attest to whether that's true or not.
A Collier's mansion, or a Collier mansion, or just a Collier, is a modern firefighting term for a dwelling of hoarders that is so filled with trash and debris, it becomes a serious danger to the occupants and the emergency responders. So the moral of the story is, don't build your own home security systems because they might crush you to death. And thank you for listening to this very spangly bonus episode, and thank you to ADT for making this episode possible for your ear holes this Tuesday. And one more time, if you didn't get it the first few million times, please head over to ADT.com/podcast to find out all you need to know about how ADT can make your home super smart and super safe.
See you on Thursday.
See you on Thursday.
See you on Thursday for our normal episode.
Goodbye forever, except not. See you on Thursday.
Bye.